And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday afternoon as we help you get over the hump and towards the weekend. Coming up, the Big 12 and the Pac-12 may be working together. How the tables have turned. Plus, what should we be looking forward to the most for this college football season for each conference? Which schools produce the best talent at which positions? And in the NFL, which quarterbacks have taken the biggest step back and the biggest step forward in the last 12 months? Also, we'll start the process of checking in on a few training camps over the next few days as we check in on Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne, even Tim Tebow and Urban Meyer down in Jacksonville later on this afternoon, and why I'm bullish on the Jaguars this year. We'll also talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling as we reach the end of the Olympics. And speaking of which, some sad news we'll get to involving an Olympic athlete from the area. We'll touch on that later on this afternoon as well. Got some River Dog tickets to give away. Plenty to do over the next couple of hours. And as always, you can always join the conversation throughout the afternoon. You can give us a call, 843-721-9500. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Head on over there, and by clicking on our show page, you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted right there. Or you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
Oh, just trying to keep the raindrops on this camel ride to a minimum and doing just fine. About you?
Yeah, not too bad. Looks like it's going to rain out there. Is it supposed to rain again today? It feels like this is Seattle. What's going on here? It's raining every day.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a rainy week. We had a few raindrops out in Goose Creek where I live this morning. So.
Oh, boy. We have that to look forward to. As you know, we start to get back to football practice, I know there are a handful of schools, high school football teams right now dealing with some COVID issues as they try to ramp it back up here in preparation for the upcoming season. Let me start with this. The Big 12 and the Pac-12. Maybe working together or trying to moving forward after the news of Oklahoma and Texas bailing on the Big 12. The Big 12 has suddenly become like the rest of us during this pandemic. We got this report yesterday from Max Olson of The Athletic that reported this about the Big 12 reaching out to the Pac-12 and talking about some sort of connection, maybe just in scheduling, but at least having those conversations about, hey, what can we do together? Or maybe how can you help us out? Or what's the best approach here moving forward for when we eventually lose Oklahoma and Texas? And as I said, the Big 12, well, they're figuring out what it's like for the rest of us throughout this pandemic, especially if you run a company, right? That it's hard to operate with the same expenses while having your revenue cut in half. And the Big 12 have said themselves that half of their TV contract, half of the revenue comes from Texas and Oklahoma. Now, the difference is they get a little bit of a head start. I still think Texas and Oklahoma leaves early, but they keep saying 2025. And if that's the case, then you have 4 years to figure this thing out. Even if they were to leave for next year, you still have about 12 months to figure things out. For you and I, when the pandemic hit, we didn't have much time to figure it out. I mean, it went from 0 to 60 quickly. We thought, like, this isn't going to be much of an issue for us here in the States. And then Rudy Gobert tested positive. And really, that escalated things. Tom Hanks tested positive, right? And that escalated things on that Wednesday night and shut down everything back in March. March of last year, 17 months ago. And if you were running a company, if you were a small business owner, if you had a restaurant, right, all of a sudden, you were told within about 48 hours, right, everyone's got to go home, got to quarantine, no in-person contact, everyone has to wear a mask, this, that, right, no dining inside. You were probably freaked out. You didn't know, like the rest of us, you know, what this entailed, what this pandemic was going to lead to. Maybe some of your workers didn't want to work. And you still had, for the most part, the same expenses. You still had to pay rent on the building. You still had to pay, you know, all the overhead. You had to pay the bills. You had to pay the employees that you could still keep on. Try to pay yourself as well. And yet your revenue was just slashed in probably more than 50%. And you had to try to find a way to figure it out. And unfortunately, a lot of companies, especially a lot of restaurants, really suffered. Couldn't make it through the pandemic. The Big 12, in a similar sense, where they're trying to figure out how can we still exist, how can we still operate when we lose 50% of our revenue. And if they don't come up with a plan, much like those restaurants during the pandemic, when they figured out, okay, we're going to have to, you know, transition into a takeout business or a delivery business. Now let's get an app. Let's get on DoorDash, whatever it is. Let's try to drum up some business elsewhere. Let's get creative. Try to make this work and be safe during the pandemic. And some restaurants were fortunate enough to make it through or to be okay. Maybe you thought, we got to shut our doors for a little bit, come back a few months from now, you know, regrouped and ready to go. Or unfortunately, we have to lay off our staff. It's just going to be, you know, me and my wife working in there, handling everything, working long hours to try to keep things afloat. Whatever it is, you had to come up with a plan to make it through. The Big 12 is trying to come up with that same plan to make this through, or to make through to make it through this. And their hope or their plan, their thought process is, well, maybe the Pac-12 can help us out. Now, we know college sports in general, but especially now with this whole realignment, it's very cutthroat. And teams, especially now, or conferences, are desperate. Everyone else in that Big 12 should be pretty desperate right now. If I'm the Big 10, I don't want to fall behind either. I'm looking around thinking like, ooh, who can we add to try to keep up with the SEC? Similar to the ACC. We're getting stories this week, right? Reports about Clemson and Florida State reaching out to the SEC. Everybody suddenly, it's like a reality check or a wake-up call. Everyone is suddenly checking themselves. Like, is this the best move for us? Should we be in this conference? Could we go over there? Are they going to try to move on from us? Are they going to try to add to the conference? What's going on? Everybody suddenly, right, you're picking up the phone. You want to figure out what's best for us. What's going to happen to our conference? What should we be doing? Should we be proactive? Should we reach out to somebody? Almost like when you work at a company and they, like, file for bankruptcy or something, right? You know, like, the end is probably soon, or they're going to be bought out. The company's going to be bought out, and you think, well, when the new company takes over, the new boss gets here, we have no idea who he's keeping. So you start getting your resume updated, and you make some calls and think, like, hey, you guys have any openings over there at your company? And you start applying to some jobs and put some feelers out, like, in case anything happens here in the next couple of months, new company comes in, they clean house, and I'm going to need something else. I could be available in a few months if you have something over there. That's what a lot of these schools are doing. They're getting things lined up just in case. They're getting things, and they're trying to check how secure they are. Is our conference okay? Do we need to come up with a plan B? Do we need an exit strategy? And so for these Big 12 teams, they're the ones that should be the most concerned or the most panicked, because the Big 12, they're taking on water here over the next couple of years. So according to the story, they reached out to the Pac-12, which is interesting. The Pac-12, for the first time in who knows how long, seems to actually have some leverage in all this. It's the Big 12 calling the Pac-12 asking for their help, you know, asking for them to bail them out. And the Pac-12 is sitting over there thinking like, man, for years you guys didn't care about us. You forgot about us. We almost went bankrupt, right? Nobody reached out a hand to help us. And here, right, in the words of Michael Scott, how the turntables, is that what the line was? How the tables have turned where now the Big 12 may need. The Pac-12 may actually be needed. For years, we thought, well, we could just move on, right? If you're going to cut a Power 5 conference, we can move on without the Pac-12. Let these other four conferences each get a playoff team. That's usually what happens anyways. Crown a champion. Nobody's good enough in the Pac-12. Now, suddenly, the Pac-12's sitting there, right? They should kick their feet up with a big smile. Their new commissioner, he just takes over. And look at this. The Big 12's calling them saying, hey, you want to work out a deal? You want to help us out here? And the Pac-12... if they're petty, you should be saying, no, forget you guys. You have done nothing for us. You have forgotten about us. You have mocked us. You have never helped us. We have fallen behind. Now you're in the same position, and you want us to help you out. But for the Pac-12, I also don't think it makes much sense for them. Stuart Mandel of The Athletic has been all over the economics in all this. He has been crunching all the numbers. Because we also had a report this week about Kansas. Somebody reported, it's just a rumor, right? Similar to these Clemson, Florida State reports or rumors about the SEC where no one else is reporting it. Some random guy on radio is saying it. And that's coming from a random guy on the radio. But Kansas, according to these reports, Kansas is going to be joining the Big Ten. It'll be announced in the next couple of weeks. Now, I find this hard to believe. The Big Ten's response to the SEC's expansion after the SEC adds two blue bloods would not be, let's go add the worst football team around. And you may say, well, Kansas has a great basketball program. There has never been realignment driven by basketball. I've shared this many times on the show as a UConn fan. I'm still bitter over it. When the Big Ten chose Rutgers over UConn, UConn had a lousy, still does, lousy football program. But they're one of the better basketball programs. Did it make a difference? Rutgers basketball's terrible. Their football's not all that great either, but it's better than UConn. And so the Big Ten took Rutgers. Why? Strictly because of football. I think UConn would be the stronger case, especially from just a basketball, right? Their basketball is better than Rutgers football. Their basketball, men and women, is better than anything Rutgers has. Nobody was interested. They wound up in the AAC. And they had to go to like a group of five conference. Nobody cared because their football's not good enough. Realignment is always driven by football. So does Kansas have a great basketball program to offer somebody? Of course. But those conferences aren't going to be as interested because the football team is terrible. And when you go and you crunch the numbers like Stuart Mandel did, when you take away Oklahoma and Texas, the rest of the Big 12 is going to make less than half of what the Big 10 is already making. So would adding Kansas help? Maybe a little bit in terms of, you know, try to get a little more money based off of just the basketball. You add Kansas to it, and that may help, just a little blip on it. But the Big Ten's doing okay. They're making more than twice as much as the rest of those teams in the Big 12. Why should they add those teams? Why should the Pac-12? The Pac-12 could use some help, certainly, in their TV contract and making more money. But when you look at the Big 12, you know, without Oklahoma and Texas, there's not much left. You look at the Pac-12, there is some history there, even with Oregon over the past 20 years. Certainly USC is one of the bigger brands. They have some good programs in the Pac-12 historically. In the Big 12, you're talking about, really, should they take on like TCU or like Iowa State, as good as Iowa State's supposed to be this year? Is that a big draw? Even Baylor, you know, Baylor's that a big deal? Like, ooh, we're getting Baylor to join the conference. Do you really need to bend over backwards for something? Kansas State, does that get the people excited out on the West Coast? Like, hey, don't worry, we're adding Kansas State. You can come watch Kansas State football this year. Does that really move the needle for you? And I've said this on the show before, but, you know, the Pac-12 was like the Big 12's little brother or something, where the Big 12 should have been so happy to have the Pac-12 around. Because without the Pac-12, suddenly the attention turns to the Big 12. And people would start realizing, like, yeah, you know what? You're not too great over there either. You haven't won anything in the last 20 years. You've been underachieving almost as much as the Pac-12. And the difference being that the Big 12 has had some better regular seasons, which makes the disappointments even larger in the postseason. The Pac-12, at least they're being ignored, right, for the most part. They're not even getting there to the playoff. So they at least have an excuse like, well, we weren't given a chance. I mean, we could be pretty competitive in that playoff. They could at least say that, even if it's not true. The Big 12, they're continually given opportunities, and they come up short in the playoff for the biggest games. Right, despite having some of the better teams in the country based off of rankings or records or stats, and still can't keep up with the other conferences. The Pac-12, we just accept, like, yeah, we're just going to exclude them. The Big 12, they still have hope. That's why they're the bigger disappointment. And it's like that person in your group, right? We can all be a little insecure. So in your friend group, maybe you're worried, like, oh, boy, right, I'm starting to become the loser of this group. I have to make sure that guy over there remains the loser of the group. And so you're really tough on him, and you're always teasing him, and right, you try to get your other buddies whenever you're all together, right, make fun of him. Oh, look at his shoes, or oh, how's that crummy job going, whatever it is, because you know once he gets a promotion or if he stops hanging out with you guys, you become the loser of the group that everyone's going to be making fun of. That was the Big 12 for the last couple of years. They should be sitting around thinking, thank goodness we have the Pac-12. They take all the heat off of us, because the Big 12 wasn't much different. And now Texas and Oklahoma is leaving. The Big 12 is about to disappear, and they're the ones reaching out to the Pac-12 for help. Right, funny how that works. We're now seeing the Big 12 in the real light. Right, we're now seeing without Texas and Oklahoma, you don't have much either. And Texas and Oklahoma have been underachievers for the last 15-plus years. I don't imagine any sort of connection or, you know, the realignment between those two happening, between the Pac-12 and the Big 12. I don't see the Pac-12 absorbing the Big 12 or taking on some of those teams. Sure, there could be some deals for like a TV deal in terms of games, scheduling stuff. That could help. Could be good exposure. You get the Pac-12 into some other time zones and some other areas, play the Big 12, some of those teams, right? They're a little more competitive to play against than, say, the SEC. There could be some benefits there. Same with the Big 12, right? You could get some good games out of it maybe. That helps. You go out to the West Coast, expose yourself to a new audience. Those things could be good, but I don't see any sort of conference realignment or converging the two in the near future. And for the Big 12, you just have to stay afloat for the next couple of years. You have to exist long enough to get the buyout money from Texas and Oklahoma and then have a plan B ready to go 4 years from now and figure it out. Right? But you have to stick around long enough to get that money and then hope that you move forward. Much like a lot of people had to try to figure out in the past year and a half with the pandemic. Right? How can we just stay afloat long enough until this thing passes? Until we can get back to normal? Until people start coming out to eat once again? And you have to come up with that plan to make it through. And that's the Big 12. And the first part of their plan, apparently, well, let's ask the Pac-12, see if they can help us out. And if I'm the Pac-12, I'm saying, yeah, no thanks. We'll play some games with you. We'll do some scheduling things. But you're not coming into our conference. And it's interesting how the tables have turned. Not too long after I was saying here on this show that the Big 12, not much different than the Pac-12. Pac-12's just a little bit worse, taking everybody's attention away from you. Because we all love to point and laugh at the Pac-12. We love to mock them and talk about how bad they are, and all the while kind of ignoring the spot the Big 12's in. And now look at that. The Big 12 is actually in a worse position than the Pac-12. And they're looking for their help to come bail them out here moving forward. Coming up, what are we looking forward to most with this upcoming college football season? I'll give you my favorite storyline for each conference in college football this year. And we'll do it next. It's the More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
What should you be looking forward to the most in each conference in college football this year? Let's get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. This song always reminds me of the movie Knives Out, which came out just about 2 years ago. And this was used in a big scene. And whenever I hear this song, great song, I always think of that movie. And of course, typical Hollywood, great film. It was a whodunit. I love those movies like that. And the way that they did it, and they had a great cast. Really enjoyed that movie. So, of course, they come out with a second one, which I think comes out next year. Probably going to ruin it. But I'm sure I'll watch it. Knives Out. Great movie if you haven't seen it. We've been paying so much attention to the future of college football. Right, we've been talking about playoff expansion. That probably won't happen for at least another 4 years. We've been talking about the SEC's expansion. They're telling us it's not going to happen for another 4 years. We're always paying attention to the future. Even name, image, and likeness snuck up on us quickly, but the story began a year ago when teams were signing bills that were going to go into effect, you know, 3 years from now. Things changed. Florida escalated the whole process. Here we are with name, image, and likeness going on now. So I guess name, image, and likeness gives us a reason to pay attention to these stories because you never know when it could happen. Right? Texas and Oklahoma could surprise us and suddenly be in the SEC next year. But my point being, we focus a lot on the future. What about the present? What about currently? Because the college football season is a month away. Less than that. But a month from today is the first full Saturday of college football. There'll be games on a Thursday. There'll be a few games, you know, on a Saturday later on this month. But in terms of the full Saturday, you know, like Clemson, Georgia playing, the first Saturday, South Carolina's first game, that Saturday when everyone else is in action, other than the quote-unquote week zero or the Thursday night games, it's a month from today. The first NFL preseason game is tomorrow night. Still hard to believe, at least for me. I woke up today, and somebody said that, and I thought, oh, yeah, that's right, tomorrow night. I could sit down tomorrow night and watch a football game. Boy, is it great to have it back. So as we get ready for college football this season, starting up in just a few weeks, instead of worrying about what the future may hold, 2025, let's focus on this season and what you should be looking towards the most in each conference. You know, like the biggest storyline, or maybe even the biggest question. What I'm most curious in seeing or figuring out this year in each conference in college football. And let's run through them conference by conference. Let's start with the SEC. The SEC is a lot like college football in general this year, which is not a surprise because we know the SEC is the best conference and it usually drives college football. So whatever's going on in the SEC is kind of going on in college football. And in both cases, you have a lot of top teams replacing quarterback talent. We've been talking about this throughout the offseason. I think it's the biggest storyline of the college football season. The amount of good teams replacing quarterbacks. I believe it's 8 of the 11 teams in terms of best odds. If you take the 11 teams in college football with the best odds to win a national title this year, 8 of them will have a new quarterback. Imagine in the NFL, if you took 2/3 of the playoff teams, they had to replace a quarterback the next year. Right? You would expect a little parity. You would expect something to change to have the season be a little topsy-turvy. So that's what's going on in college football this year, but also in the SEC where you have Alabama, even I'll say Georgia. JT Daniels only played a couple of games at the end of the year, essentially a new quarterback, right? Florida, Texas A&M. So that's the main storyline in the SEC. I think it's 10 out of 14 teams have a new quarterback. LSU's quarterback just got hurt. So that's the main storyline in the SEC is which quarterback can step up. But specifically, to not be so broad and to zero this in, my biggest storyline, or the thing I'm looking forward to the most in the SEC this year, is Georgia, and it is JT Daniels. And I want to see if JT Daniels can be that guy, finally, to get Georgia over the hump. Alabama, I'm sure, will be just fine. People that have watched Bryce Young, he hasn't started a game yet for Alabama, but, you know, the scouts who watched him in high school or even see him in training camp or at practice with Alabama, they'll tell you that he's going to be a star. And he is one of the biggest recruits in terms of rankings that Saban has ever had. And he's had a lot of good recruits. So it tells you how good this kid can be, that potential. And when you talk to people that have watched him play, even if it's just in practice or if it was in high school, they tell you he's the real deal. He is going to be a stud. And if Mac Jones was any indication last year of a guy stepping in at Alabama that even for Mac Jones, we didn't have high hopes for, 3-star recruit, and I was there for a couple of years as a backup, didn't really impress in 2019. Then he becomes a starter last year, and he's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. I'm sure Bryce Young will be just fine. So too will Alabama. So the question becomes, is JT Daniels good enough at Georgia to elevate Georgia to that level or even beyond? Is he good enough to help them clear that hurdle and get past Alabama? Because we all assume that will be the matchup in the SEC title game. Alabama should win their division. As long as Nick Saban is there, they should win the division every year. And Georgia should win the division. Behind Georgia, a lot of toss-ups. I think Florida will be better than a lot of people. I think Kentucky will be better than normal. I think Missouri will be better this year than last year. But I don't think those are teams, at least outside of Florida, that can legitimately win the division and go to the SEC title game. It comes down to Georgia, and for Georgia, it comes down to their quarterback. Do they finally have that guy to take them where they want to go? Right, much like I was talking about the Chiefs yesterday. The Chiefs had Alex Smith, good quarterback. They won a bunch of games. But they didn't have the guy that could take them there until Pat Mahomes came along. Georgia, they've had some solid quarterbacks over the years. They've won a bunch of games, but they still can't find a way to get past Alabama or to go win a national championship. Could JT Daniels be like their Pat Mahomes? Or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? You bring in Tom Brady, oh, you go win a Super Bowl. Once you finally find that guy that elevates you to the point that you can go win the biggest game, will that be JT Daniels with Georgia? Because I do think he is the most talented quarterback in the SEC heading into this year. My second little storyline, if I were to give you like a subheader for the SEC, would be LSU after the news from the past 48 hours. Miles Brennan broke his arm somehow. We still don't know. He's out for the year. And now LSU will have to turn, it seems, to sophomore Max Johnson, son of Brad Johnson. I'm curious to see how well he plays and LSU does in their rebound from last year's disappointing season. They won the national championship. They were lousy last year. This is a big year for them. I always compare it to the rock band, where you have your whole life to produce that first album. And it's usually really good. And then, by that point, right, you have a record deal. And they say, okay, that was a great album. Now you have to put out your second album in the next 2 years. And you think, oh, boy. Right? It took me years to polish that album. I've been waiting my whole life. I've been writing songs since I was a teenager. Finally got this contract. We put all the songs on an album. And now they say, okay, that's great. Well, you have to be in the studio for this number of days, and you have to come up with this number of songs, and the album has to be put out in the next 24 months. And for the first time, you know, you're writing under a time crunch. And the second albums, for most bands, usually aren't very good. And then they kind of get it figured out, because it's the first time they go through that. And that's why the third album is the real make or break. And a lot of classic bands had great third albums. And it showed, yeah, you know what, they do have some ability here. They have some talent. A lot of record companies only signed bands to, originally, the first deal, three albums. At least back in the day. Nowadays, I don't know if people are even signing record deals anymore. They just release it right onto, you know, Spotify or iTunes. But back in the day, you used to give them a three-album contract to see. Because you'll know by that third album. If they put out another dud, then yeah, they were kind of a one-hit wonder. But if they can put together another strong album after they figure out the recording process, working for a recording studio, and put out a strong third album, then yeah, this band has some talent. And it's similar here with LSU. They win the national championship in year one. Everything comes together. Then they lose a lot of talent, a lot of coaches. It's like, all right, let's see what you're made of. And they struggled last year, and it was understandable because of all the pieces they lost and because they were defending champs. And for Ed Orgeron and that coaching staff and those players, it was the first time they had to go through it. But now that you know what it's like, now that you know you got some pressure, you got to figure some things out, you got to nail that third album, they have to come out this year and have some sort of success, show some sort of improvement. Otherwise, I think Ed Orgeron could be out of a job just 2 years after winning a national title. Right, Gene Chizik is saying hello. So there's a lot of pressure on LSU this year, and now they just lost their quarterback. I want to see if LSU can rebound. That's storyline number two in the SEC. In the ACC, what I'm looking forward to the most, October 16th. That's when Miami and UNC play. We know Clemson's the best team in the ACC. Clemson will win the ACC. So the question always becomes, who's battling for second? Like when Larry Bird used to show up to three-point contests. Back in the day, right? And you used to walk in the locker room and say, okay, who's coming in second tonight? All right, that's like the ACC. We know Clemson's going to be at the ACC championship. Who's going to have the opportunity to face them? Miami and UNC are the next two best teams in that conference, and they square off on October 16th, which probably will decide the division and which team will go play Clemson in the ACC title game. October 16th, Miami at UNC. Two good quarterbacks, two good programs. That should be a great game. Now, UNC last year on the road went to Miami at the end of the year and killed them. Beat them 62-26. It was the most points UNC ever scored against Miami. They beat them by almost 40. But this year, Miami, even though they have to go on the road to UNC, will have 17 days to prepare. They play a Thursday game, then they have their off week, then they go to UNC. They have 17 days leading up to that game. Meanwhile, for UNC, it will be their seventh straight game to start the season. They will not have an off week at that point. In fact, their off week, I believe, is the following week. So you play seven straight games to start the year, and you welcome in Miami, who's on 17 days of rest. That will be a very intriguing game. Also, just to see how good these two are, how well they match up with one another, and if either one can actually challenge Clemson when given the opportunity at year's end. That's the biggest storyline in the ACC. We know Clemson's the best team. Who is the second best, and can they actually challenge Clemson this year? We'll find out October 16th when Miami and UNC battle for the opportunity to take on Clemson. That's essentially what that game is. In the Big 12, the biggest storyline or the thing I'm looking forward to the most, well, Oklahoma, Spencer Rattler. It's been too long since Oklahoma, kind of like Georgia, right? We're able to get over that hump and win the big game, win a national championship, beat an SEC team in the playoff. Do they have the quarterback to finally get it done this year? They've had some good quarterbacks in years past. It's usually been the defense that was the issue. But Spencer Rattler is supposed to be the Heisman winner this year. He's supposed to be the number one pick. He's supposed to be the greatest quarterback in college football this season. Will he be good enough to get Oklahoma where they want to be and actually, finally, win a national championship? I'm curious to see. Right now, the pressure's on him. Last year, he came in, big recruit, right? But a freshman, it was a pandemic season. Oklahoma wasn't as good. Now we're talking him up about the Heisman, number one pick, best quarterback. He has to live up to those expectations. And we had somebody on the show just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, that said Oklahoma is his pick to win the national championship. So there's a lot of pressure on Oklahoma and Spencer Rattler. Can he get it done? The second little mini storyline, Iowa State. Iowa State's been a trendy pick to make the playoffs this year. Can they get it done out of the Big 12? Can they reach the playoff? Will they be that good? In the Big 10, the biggest thing I'm looking forward to, or my biggest question, is who's going to step up? Ohio State will be the favorite, and for good reason. But they're having a new quarterback come in C.J. Stroud. And then there's an opportunity for a lot of other teams to take advantage, to come up behind them and try to win that conference. Right, like Harbaugh at Michigan. This may be his last stand. Even Minnesota had a disappointing year last season. They have the most experienced team in the country this year, and they get to play Ohio State week one. So they'll have their own opportunity to try to put themselves in the conversation. Can Penn State rebound after last year's disappointing season? Can Wisconsin take that next step? Ohio State is the favorite, and rightfully so, and I do think they end up winning the Big Ten, but there's an opportunity this year for some of these other schools. Wisconsin, Iowa, Penn State. What about Indiana? Had a great year last year. Michael Penix Jr. is coming back, hopefully healthy. And Ohio State is maybe a little vulnerable there. They'll have one of the best receiving corps, but you know the defense, a little shaky, replacing Justin Fields at the quarterback position. Have to start with Minnesota week one. Is there somebody else in that Big Ten that can step up this year? Can Penn State rebound? Can Michigan? Can Indiana build off of last year's success? Can Wisconsin finally take that next step forward? Maybe Minnesota's a surprise. Who in the Big Ten will step up? In the Pac-12, it's a similar idea. Who is going to step up? Because the Pac-12, we wait every year for them to have a legitimate contender. Will one of these teams be that way this year? Will the Pac-12 even be included this year in the playoff conversation? But the main focus in the Pac-12 falls, of course, on USC. It always does. USC is the biggest brand there. We're waiting just like Miami and Texas. You know, when is USC going to be back? When are they going to return? And they have, at least on paper, right, a pretty good team. I mean, they went 5-1 last year. Clay Helton's back. They're returning 16 starters. And Clay Helton is one of those guys, he's on the hot seat every year. But I think especially this year, I can say that every season, but I think if USC really struggles this year, Clay Helton may be out. They play at Notre Dame this season in the non-conference. That's really the only game that stands out in the conference schedule. And they have a chance to win the Pac-12. Big year for USC in that conference. And then finishing up with the group of five real quick, just to run through the top teams, Cincinnati. Cincinnati's the team to watch in the group of five because last year they went 9-1. They thought they should have been a playoff team. They were never given the opportunity. Of course not. So this year they have Indiana on the schedule, at Indiana, and at Notre Dame on the schedule. They went out and they scheduled some tough out-of-conference games. So if they go, say, 9-1, well, this year they're playing more games. So let's say they go 11-1, or they go undefeated this year with that schedule, they could actually make a case to be a playoff team because that would include wins at Indiana, probably a top 25 team, and at Notre Dame, a top 25 team, maybe top 15. So Cincinnati could try to make a push this year. 9-1 last year, returning 14 starters. They're playing Indiana for the first time since 2000. They're playing Notre Dame for the first time since 1900. They said, enough of this. We got to go play some better teams and show them that we belong. And if they win this year, if they run the table, maybe they will make that case. And then just the other teams, Louisiana, Billy Napier, they have the third most experienced team coming back after their good season last year. And they get Texas week one, so they can make send a message right away. And similar to Cincinnati, you have a good year and you beat some good teams like that, you make a strong case for yourself. Then you have Gus Malzahn at UCF, and we know what he did when he first arrived at Auburn. And then even Coastal Carolina here in this state. Can they follow up last year's success? I gave you some metrics and reasons on Monday's show why I would be concerned about Coastal Carolina's season, and not just because it starts with the Citadel. Those are the teams, schools, storylines to follow, track, or watch in each conference this year in college football. Coming up, some fighting words from a politician in Texas about the conference realignment. Plus, Notre Dame players speak out on where they would like Notre Dame to go. Which conference should Notre Dame go to? Some of their players shared their answer. We'll get to that coming up. Oh, also, you know what? I got tickets to give away to the River Dogs game. This is tonight. So I got two pairs of tickets. We might as well give them away as early as we can because you're going to have to come pick them up here at the radio station. Last night's game was postponed, so tonight's actually a doubleheader, and I think it begins at 5:05. But there's two games, assuming the weather holds out and we can play baseball tonight. If not, these tickets will be good for future home games anyways, so you might as well get them in your hands. But you have to come pick them up today to use them for tonight's game. So I have two pairs of tickets. We'll give away the first pair now. Just be the third caller. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller now will give you a pair of tickets to tonight's River Dogs game over at Joe Riley Park. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What conference should Notre Dame head to? A couple of their players answer the question. We'll get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Congratulations to our winner, Justin in Somerville, who won a pair of tickets to tonight's Charleston River Dogs game. Hopefully the weather holds out and we can play some baseball tonight for your sake, all the other fans' sake, for the River Dogs' sake. They could not play last night. If you were one of our winners yesterday, well, those tickets should be good for any other home game, including even tonight and a doubleheader tonight. So Justin winning these tickets, there's a doubleheader that these tickets should be able to get you in for both games, I would imagine, and it begins, I think, at 5 o'clock tonight, two games being played. So how about that? If you were not Justin in Somerville, don't worry. We'll be giving away another pair of tickets in just a few moments to tonight's game. Give you enough time to try to get over here and grab them for tonight. I saw this. Perusing Twitter as I do during the commercial break, see what else is going on out there. You know, training camp is funny because we have big opinions either way. In fact, later on this afternoon, we'll check in on the Jaguars training camp to see how Trevor Lawrence is doing and Travis Etienne and even Tim Tebow and Urban Meyer. I think the Jaguars are one of the more fascinating teams this offseason. First-year head coaches could not be put on Hard Knocks, but if they could, I think the Jaguars are one of the more interesting teams to watch this offseason. So we'll check in with somebody from training camp down there in Jacksonville to find out how things are going so far for Trevor Lawrence and Etienne and everybody else. We'll do that in the final hour this afternoon. But training camps are funny because we have such strong opinions on both sides. Trevor Lawrence on Monday struggled. He went something like 1-for-7 in the 11-on-11 drills with an interception, something like that. And all of a sudden, right, you get all these reports or people talking online like, oh boy, Trevor Lawrence doesn't look very good. He's going to be a bust. It's training camp. And do you ever get judged on your practice? I've said this on the show before. And I don't care. I don't care what they do this week, these next couple of weeks, or even in the preseason. It's all practice. Now, where's Allen Iverson when you need him? We're talking about practice here. If you were practicing your speech that you were going to give the next day, right, were you judged on the practice round you did in your bedroom or the actual speech you gave to the teacher, the class, or the clients the next day? Right? It's practice. But you'll also get the other reaction as well, where everyone looks great. You either look really bad or you look really good in training camp. That rookie quarterback in training camp looks like the next star or he looks like a bust. You already make your determination before he even plays a snap. So I say all this because I just saw this tweet where John Gruden said on NFL Network that Bryan Edwards, former Gamecock, has been looking like Terrell Owens this training camp. High praise. And then Levy Edwards, who apparently covers the Raiders, went even higher when he tweeted out today that Edwards actually looks like Randy Moss in training camp to him. Randy Moss, Bryan Edwards, second-year receiver who had 11 catches last year, taken towards the end of the third round, is looking like Randy Moss in training camp. Let's just throw that comparison around. Now, I do like Edwards, and I remember talking on the show at the time when both he and Debo were at the Gamecocks telling you that I thought Edwards was the more of an NFL wide receiver. Now, he is athletic. He's got the right build, 6'3", over 200 pounds, tall enough, quick enough, can jump. He's got all the pieces. Got to stay healthy. He was injured last year at the Raiders. And when he played, he only had 11 catches in 12 games. But when he did make plays, they were down the field. He was one of their big play receivers. So I do think he has potential, but come on. He's played 12 games, and now in his second training camp, we're comparing him to Randy Moss? Let's take it easy with that. Let's see what he does in some games. Let's see if he catches a couple of touchdowns first. But there you go. They're all excited about the former Gamecock out in Vegas, Brian Edwards, and the job he's doing at training camp. Okay, I rambled on long enough. We'll have to get to the sound from Notre Dame coming up a little bit later on. Plus, a politician in Texas took a shot at the Longhorns over their move to the SEC. We'll play that for you later on as well. But I told you we'd be giving away another pair of tickets here in just a matter of minutes. It's time to do that now. In case you weren't our lucky winner just a few minutes ago, you now have another opportunity. I got another pair of tickets to give away to the River Dogs game tonight. You have to come by, pick them up at the station, but you can grab them this afternoon. All you have to do to win these tickets, just be the third caller now. We'll do it again. Let's try it again. 843-721-9500. 843-721-9500. Third caller now. You get our second pair of tickets to tonight's River Dogs game. After this, I can't help you. You're on your own. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
Great show. You're doing a good job.
Hey, you're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You're always getting these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear, and we like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke, and I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke.
Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Charleston that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours. Anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Up hour one here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Congratulations to second winner, Chris from Charleston, who's got a pair of tickets to tonight's River Dogs game. Now I just hope the weather stays away and we can get some baseball. But if not, don't worry. Since you have the tickets, or will have the tickets in your possession, they should be good for any other home game this year if they don't play baseball tonight. Otherwise, a doubleheader tonight because of yesterday's rainout. So, there you go. Two games for the price of none. We'll be giving away more River Dog tickets throughout the week and throughout the season here on ESPN Radio Charleston. All right, I wanted to touch on this. Unfortunately, sad news here from the area before we go at the end of the first hour here. But yesterday was announced that Raven Saunders, the Olympic athlete from Charleston, her mother passed away yesterday. And obviously, just a heartbreaking story. Raven is finished competing, I believe, right, in the Olympics. She finished a second in the Olympic Games in shot put this year and was part of the 2016 Olympic Games as well in Brazil, so she medaled this year. So to look at the bright side, if there is a positive in all this, right, is that her mother got to see her compete, and she got to compete before taking on this burden and heartbreaking news. But Raven Saunders, who is still over at the Olympics in Japan, her mother passed away yesterday. Now, as I understand it and what has been reported, you know, because the families couldn't go over to the Olympics, so a lot of the families of the Olympic athletes met in Orlando to watch the Olympics together, which is a nice idea, right? You get the families together. They all support each other. They watch their children compete from Orlando, and that's where she was with her other daughter at the time of her passing. I believe it was yesterday morning. So just a terrible story, especially because of the timing. There's never a good time to say goodbye to a loved one. but especially when it's supposed to be, right? She medaled in the Olympics for the first time, and then about 24 hours later gets this news when it's supposed to be one of the most joyous occasions of your career or even life, and instead you have to deal with the passing of your mother, right? It's terrible. It's tragic. So my heart goes out to Raven and the rest of her family. Her mother passed away yesterday, who used to work right down the road from us here at the Krispy Kreme down the road. And by all accounts, you know, was a wonderful woman. So certainly thoughts and prayers go out to the Saunders family. Her mother, Clarissa, passed away yesterday at a time in which this is supposed to be a time of celebration for her achievements at the Olympics and just getting there, and instead has to deal with, you know, the biggest heartbreak anyone can suffer by losing not only a loved one, but a parent. And for a girl to lose your mother like that, so just terrible. So thoughts and prayers go out to the Saunders family. It was a sad story to see yesterday in the aftermath of her performance in the Olympics. But certainly thinking of the Saunders family, and thoughts and prayers go out to all those that knew her, or certainly that are related to her here in the Charleston area. To segue from that to maybe more positive sports news, when we come back, speaking of the Olympics, we'll talk some Olympic golf. Time for our weekly conversation with Jeremy Schilling, our resident golf expert, when we return. And we'll talk about what happened in the Olympic event of golf this year with Jeremy when we come back. It's the More Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.